You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationals. Today's date is Monday, January 20th, 2025. Grandpa Dan streaming with you, radioalbion.com. Yeah, I know. I wasn't here on Friday. On Friday, had some things going on and time became a crunch. And honestly, I didn't really have anything much to cover. So skipped on Friday. Happens from time to time. But we are back. We are back today. Of course, the big thing in the news today, of course, is Trump inauguration. And all the news is Trump inauguration. As we do our Daily Mail Monday, the whole page is covered in Trump inauguration stuff. We're going to go through some of this. We may have some time to go to a more fun story. We'll see if we get time for that. I've really just got a single story on this I figured we'd go through on this Trump inauguration thing. And so just, it's reminiscent, like, better than the halftime show. We get the Trump inauguration show. And there's news stories splattered all over this morning on the news. And of course, on the one hand, you know, this is just, you've got Trump up there doing a rally. Recently did the Village People. It was very boomer tier, very cringe. Any way you cut it, it was extremely cringy. On the other hand, there's protests. They showed a deal, you know, protests somewhere against the Trump inauguration. And all these people look exactly as you would expect them to look in the land of Trump derangement. But as you all know, here at Radio Albion, we don't suffer from either Trump derangement syndrome nor false Trump idolatry. Almost said that wrong. So our story I was going to go through today is everything Donald Trump has said he will do on day one of his presidency. Now, talking about those who have created like this cult figure, this personality cult figure, this false messiah aura around Donald Trump, they're inevitably headed for disappointment. I mean, you see people all pumped up over this and excited. It was funny because I was out and about over the weekend in crowds of just random people that I didn't know. And I had people coming up and talking to me about, you know, well, you know, Trump coming in there and things are going to get better. And well, how do you handle that? You know, I mean, it's not the place to just start dropping black pills on normies, you know. I don't know. You know, I've been at this a long time and I don't even know. I don't know the answer to that. But I mean, on the one hand, I'm sympathetic and I understand. But on the other hand, what are you basing this on? You know, and it's just like people are like, things are changing. I had one person tell me things are changing in the country. People are getting enough. And yeah. People are for sure tired of a lot of the stuff. That's why they're rolling some of it back. You see, and before Trump even got in there, they're rolling back some of the more extreme elements of this quote unquote woke thing. But this idea that America somehow we're dawning a new day, things are turning around. And I think, you know, you're just going to have to learn. You're just going to have to face the disappointment. Learn the hard way. Let's go through this. Donald Trump will have a very hectic Monday if he gets around to just a handful of his day one pledges. 78-year-old will be sworn in as president, host a rally in the war in Ukraine, and start mass deportation raids across the country, and nix electric car mandates and pardon thousands who were convicted for their parts in the January 6th Capitol riot. Well, thank you very much, Daily Mail. We don't even need the rest of the article. It never ceases to amaze me how poorly written these Daily Mail articles. It's all I can do. I tell you. So let's skip down there and go through some of their points they have here. First up is mass deportations. On day one, I will launch the largest deportation program in American history to get the criminals out, Trump declared at his Madison Square Garden rally. There are signs that the wheels are in motion for such a move even before Trump takes office. Ending illegal immigration was one of Trump's top campaign pledges in a race where he said migrants, quote, infest our country. That line drew howls from critics, and his policy to get law enforcement to eject millions of people who came here illegally is certain to draw lawsuits and scrutiny. There are reports Monday that preparations are underway for a mass immigration raid in Chicago as soon as Tuesday. Well, it's got to happen, and if it doesn't happen, we're not going to have a country any longer, Trump told NBC before heading to Washington. Trump's team has yet to specify how he would carry out the massive nationwide effort with millions of migrants estimated to be living here illegally. Luckily for Trump, the Senate is already teeing up another immigration measure now that the Senate voted to break a filibuster of the Laken Riley Act requiring detention of migrants charged with certain crimes. A vote Monday could get the bill to his desk on his second day of office. Now, the MAGA crowd can cheer this all they want, and I guess it's whatever. But you always see the framework of these narratives. It's always the illegal immigration. You know, this flies in the face of the recent controversy over the H-1B program, doesn't it? And you'll see these conservatives, we're not against immigration. We're for legal immigration. And you always wonder how the reasoning, there is no reasoning, but if there were, how would you twist yourself to convince yourself that there were some sort of reasoning here? In other words, if Biden just unilaterally declared all of these people legal citizens, they just handed out the paperwork to these people, what would be the Republican talking point here? Well, they're legal now. So we've got to embrace them. It's our values in a democracy of who we are, because after all, there's a poem on the Statue of Liberty or something. It always just misses the point. It's like it's about the illegal immigration. We got to make sure we got to vet these people. I mean, again, it's a whatever if they're actually going to do some of this. I wouldn't hold my breath. There's so many people that have come in here. I don't mean to sound, just negative for the sake of being negative. But I mean, the reality is things are so far gone. It would have to be a huge, massive program. I thought this last line was something, this one line here was interesting, talking about breaking the filibuster for a bill that would require the detention of migrants charged with certain crimes. So how does a bill like this even get filibustered? If you or I commit certain crimes, we're sure as hell going to get detained, aren't we? We're going to get thrown in jail if we commit certain crimes. But you're telling me these people commit certain crimes, I'm sorry, and they're not even getting detained. It's just like, what? Do you promise to come back later? I mean, what even is that? This country is so absurd. What's up next? Ending Russia's war in Ukraine. Finally putting an end to Russia's three-year-old war against Ukraine is likely to be among the first plans to fall by the wayside if facts on the ground are an indication. That is a war that's dying to be settled. I will get it settled before I even become president, Trump said in his debate with VP Kamala Harris. On Wednesday, Russia blasted Ukraine with yet another volley of ballistic missile attacks, taking out key power infrastructure in the winter. Nevertheless, Trump is determined to apply his negotiating skills to the conflict. And Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov praised some of his recent statements that echoed Moscow's narrative on NATO membership. Trump has touted his relations with Zelensky and Russian President Putin, but Ukraine has been refusing Moscow's demands to concede territory seized in the war. Trump has made so many domestic policy pronouncements for his first day that it will be hard for him to fit them all in, especially now that he's added a speech at D.C.'s Capital One area after moving the festivities indoors. Trump appears to have avoided having to carry out a threat that all hell would break out if there isn't a Gaza ceasefire and hostage release deal before he takes office. That came together in the final days of the Biden administration with assist from his negotiator. This is so stupid. I love how the Daily Mail, how they attempt to frame this up, that Trump has to go in here and try to negotiate between these two parties. And if they really want, if Trump really wants to end the Ukraine war, he literally can do that. We all know the Zelensky regime is being propped up by the U.S. All Trump has to do is call up Zelensky and says there's no more weapons, there's no more, cut the money laundering thing off, and it's over. Now, we know that there is U.S., probably British and other NATO special forces in Ukraine. And one of the things I absolutely believe that they're tasked with is not fighting the Russians on the front line. I believe they're tasked with protecting Zelensky. I do. I think that's one, when you hear about U.S. special forces or British special forces in the Ukraine, I believe one of their primary jobs is to protect Zelensky. People say, how come the Ukrainians are just sitting around and letting this guy genocide their people? Because he's not Ukrainian. He's Jewish. He's not a Ukrainian. So obviously he doesn't care one way or the other how many Ukrainians get fed into the meat grinder as he and his cronies and oligarchs line their pockets, taking part in this giant money laundering scheme. Nevertheless, people sit around and say, well, why do the Ukrainians put up with this? And I believe one of the reasons he hasn't already been cooed out of there is he's being protected by U.S., British, and probably other NATO special forces. All he has to do is pull that out. Cut off the money, cut off the weapons, say we're done with you, pull out all personnel, and the Zelensky regime will literally collapse overnight. When you read these takes like this and they act like, well, Trump will have to go in and try to find a compromise between... No, he doesn't. Zelensky is literally depending on the U.S. and NATO to protect him, to keep him there. All he has to do is say it's over, and it's literally going to be over. Now, what's funny is if he did do that, it would probably cause more of a mess for Russia than playing some kind of back and forth, you know, silly back and forth role. And of course, the other thing that always gets missed in these articles is anything that they put forward has to be accepted by the Russians. They're the ones in control of the battlefield. You know, all of this other gibberish they publish. I saw another article, which I passed on doing today, and is another one of those ridiculous Daily Mail Ukrainian war propaganda things where they repeat, like, you know, almost 1 million Russian soldiers have been slaughtered by the brave Ukrainians. And, you know, well, there's more talk of doing a frozen conflict like with Korea, you know, with the Korean Peninsula. And it's like that requires Russia going along with that. And there's no reason for them to actually agree to do that. They act like Russia doesn't have a role, a say-so in it, when they're the ones that are winning any way you try to cut it. Now, again, is he actually going to do that? I have no idea. He could do it. But again, there's so much money and so much corruption that comes back to the U.S. here. Only time will tell. Next up, pardon of the January 6th defendants. Trump has said he would pardon January 6th defendants on his first day and maybe the first 9 minutes. This came after a campaign where he played a rendition of the national anthem sung by incarcerated January 6 defendants. Trump's pick for AG Pam Bondi got quizzed during her confirmation hearing how she would respond to Trump pardons of those convicted of violent attacks on police officers. Of course, that's all made up. We know that is made up, but it doesn't matter. Trump may feel he owes mass pardons to his MAGA base, but not all members of his party are okay with it. Senator Tom Tillis warned against it. The Bondi hearings, folks, I was the last Senate member out of the chamber on January 6th. I saw Capitol police officers bleeding, bruised, and I saw damage to a certain extent as we were exiting. To call those people patriots is not in my lexicon, he said. Now, I think this is going to happen. They may make some exceptions, you know, to try to put some fig leaf on this. But this is one of those things that if he does not do this, if he doesn't pardon these people, because he should have done this before he left off. There was another article, again, that I passed on, that Biden did a last-minute preemptive pardon. He preemptively pardoned Fauci and a bunch of other shills before leaving office. Like, they haven't been investigated or indicted or anything. And he preemptively, well, if you do find something they did wrong, you can't do anything to them. I'm not sure how the hell that's even supposed to be legal. But obviously, again, we live in a lawless country, so it doesn't matter. He preemptively pardoned him. That reminds everybody, Trump could have done that before he left in 2020 and didn't. It just stands there as a reminder. You got Biden preemptively pardoned the likes of Anthony Fauci. Trump didn't do that for the January 6th people. He totally just left them hanging out there to dry. This is a make or break. I even among the MAGA cultists, if he doesn't pardon the January 6th people, he will have lost. I don't care if he rounds up 6 million illegals and deports them. If he doesn't pardon the January 6th people, this is going to cause a major crippling in his support. I really believe this. So I think you're going to see something. You're going to see something on this front. Because, again, this is something he's absolutely got to do to maintain any sort of keep this credibility going. I think that deal has already been done. All of this stuff, what he does or doesn't do, this is all deal making. And most of this stuff has already been negotiated out ahead of time. I think that's probably been negotiated. They might leave a few guys in there and claim, well, these guys really were evil. But for the most part, I think he's got to make that move. I think that's already been negotiated. Next up, tariffs. Many experts credit Trump's win to Americans' economic worries, and Trump has vowed to make tariffs a key day one priority. He has kept up this drumbeat during the transition, taking up tariffs on China, as well as allies like Canada or Denmark who reject his ideas. Now, this is one of those things that tariffs were, this would have been a great conversation to have, say, I don't know, 30 years ago. It's a little late for that now. You talk about Americans' economic worries, and this is true. It's not worries, it's reality. Worries implies that it could be correct or incorrect. They're just worried about it. It might be illusionary. It's not worries. It's economic reality. The economic reality of average everyday Americans is undeniable. Now, the problem with this tariffs is it's going to make it worse. It is. It's going to, there were people who will argue otherwise and say, no, this will fix it. You got to take the hard medicine to fix this problem. One of the things that's causing these economic problems in this country is a runaway inflation. And if they slap these tariffs on here, it's only going to get worse. I mean, you think things are expensive now. These corporations can charge whatever the hell they want. Now, you slap these tariffs on, setting aside the tariffs themselves and that impact, this is going to give these corporations the excuse to just go all in and keep jacking up prices and keep, you have a system. It comes back to this thing where nobody wants to admit there's a fundamental problem with the system itself. You can't band-aid it. You're not going to patch it. You're not going to, it's a fundamental problem with the system itself. What we have now that is undeniable, the reality, the economic reality, the way things economically function, the monetary system, all the rest of it. The entire system now serves to funnel the wealth of the country into the hands of, like, literally a handful of people. What amounts to a handful of people. And they're the ones that own the government. So how are you going to exactly fix this? Tariffs will just serve as another thing to funnel wealth into this handful of people. You know, I was here for the offshoring of jobs in the 90s. I remember when that took place, the government subsidized it because the corporations wanted it. They sent these jobs over to China. And the Chinese didn't just like know how to do it. They sent people over there to train them and show them how to do this. Well, now they're all caught up and they know how to do it on their own. They don't have to have anyone show them now. They have the knowledge, have the know-how. Now, you put these tariffs in, you say you're going to force these corporations to move the jobs back to America. That sounds really good. How are you going to import the human capital? How are you going to import the knowledge of how to do these things, how to manufacture these things? I mean, don't get me wrong, bringing manufacturing back to the country and moving away from being a totally financialized economy to something, to economy that actually produces things again, that's a good idea. But who knows how to do that? It's been 30 years since they exported the knowledge. You can set up a factory, you can set up the equipment, the assembly lines, whatever you want to do. That's all well and good. Who the hell is going to run it? Robots. Okay. To a certain extent, you still got to have people. The Chinese are not going to send people over here to train us, to bring us the knowledge of how to make our own stuff again. They're not going to do that. So again, how are you going to have the knowledge, the human capital, to be able to run all of this stuff? What these tariffs is going to do is drive the price of everything up even further. What you could do in lieu of the tariffs, at least right away, is, you know, if he actually had the power to do so, but we don't, because the system is what it is. Again, the system is designing its function. So it's a feature, not a bug. But in the hypothetical, if he did have the ability, what he would do is lean on these corporations and say, okay, this whole thing where you're pocketing the difference and driving your stock price up, you're importing these things for 5 cents and selling them for $500, you know, taking advantage of the cheaper labor, those are over. We'll allow you a 20%, a 30% profit margin. The rest of it, you have to drop the prices. Then all of a sudden, people would have more money again. But again, you're not going to do that. The price gouging is built in. The corporations run everything. The system is designed to funnel money into a handful of people. And unless you can address that, nothing's going to change. And I don't think he can address it. So I don't think anything's going to change. Next up, oil, drilling, and cars. I'm skipping through here. The U.S. became the world's top crude oil producer in 2018 and retains the title by a wider margin now. Trump has called to boost production even more. One of Biden's last official acts was to designate new national monuments in California that are protected from new oil and gas leasing. Trump said he would reverse it, but congressional action is likely required. Trump has vowed to roll back government incentives to buy electric cars, which he frequently attacks, despite his budding friendship with Elon Musk. The day I take office, I will cancel Crooked Joe's electric car mandate, Trump said. The incentives are meant to wean the nation from gas-powered cars, but Biden's efforts to build electric vehicle charging stations have been slow and costly. Again, this isn't going to happen. Let's talk about, I like to look at these things and say, how would you really fix it? If you really were going to fix these issues, how would you fix it? Well, for starters, they point out the U.S. is a top crude producer. So why do we still pay as much as we do for fuel? Again, because at the end of the day, they can charge whatever they want to. That's the reality. Have you ever noticed, like when you read headlines that are talking about, you know, oh, this is going to drive the price of fuel up, you know, like, oh, there was an incident, you know, in the Persian Gulf, you know, or a Saudi Arabia oil field was attacked. This could drive up the price of oil. And like literally the next day you go to the gas station and the price has been jacked up. Ever notice that? And then when they have something that they say, oh, look, this happened, it means gas prices might go down, usually ahead of some sort of political thing. Like weeks later and price might go down 2 cents. And they're like, oh, well, you got to wait for it to kick in. Whenever there's something that signals a price increase, it happens instantly, overnight, literally overnight. Sometimes within hours. And whether there's anything they say might lead to a decrease, well, you have to wait for that. The reality is they charge whatever the hell they want to. There is no market economy. People are still under this delusion that there's some sort of free market economy happening in this country. It's not. It's an oligarchy. Everything is funneled to a handful of people, and the rest of us are just livestock used to generate wealth to send to them. That's it. Nothing makes this more clear than the fact that stock prices are not are an end to themselves. I've pointed this out before. I'll point it out again here now. The original justification for having a stock market, for incorporating, for selling stocks in a company is to raise capital to increase production. You need to build more factories, hire more people. You need the capital to do this. So you sell shares in the company and people buy those shares in the anticipation that the company will become more productive. And when they become more productive and produce more things, the value of that company, because they produce things, will go up and be reflected in the stock price. And maybe you get paid a dividend. In other words, a portion of the profits for investing and producing the capital. That all sounds well and good. Well, we're way past that now. You have companies that have never really turned a profit and they're somehow valued at billions of dollars. Now we're at a point where stock price itself is the end goal. It's just casino gambling. Is this stock price going to go up? Is it going to go down? And you're gambling. These people are gambling. They're going to buy. This one's going to go up. It is no different than playing the crypto market. You buy into the Bitcoin, or you buy in the meme coin or whatever. You buy it here on the gamble that the line will go up and you can cash it out and make money. And the stock market is literally no different. I laugh when people are all about the stock market, but then they mock Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. And it's like, it's literally the same thing. These company stock prices, a lot of times, are completely detached from reality. Everything is done for the stock price. They will cut a company and they will cut a company to the bone and destroy its productivity because in the short term, they can show a bump on paper and drive the stock price up and then they cash out. They rug pull it, cash out, they pocket the money and move on. Is going to boost production. How about export tariffs? You know, export tariffs are a thing too. You can put tariffs on your own companies domestically and say, well, we're producing all this oil. We're going to detach it from the global market so that fuel prices will drive down here and help the demand. But they're not, again, they're not going to do this. This electric car thing, I want to get into that. This is what I really want to get in. I didn't really care about the oil thing. The electric car nonsense. Again, you would have to address the fundamental problem, the truth, and no one's going to speak it. The truth is climate change is a hoax. You have to get that out there. The fact that you have the EPA, which has declared carbon dioxide is a pollutant causing climate change, you have to start with that and say that's bullshit. And you have to admit the lie, and they're not going to admit the lie. The electric car thing has been pushed. They've raised the fuel mileage requirements to the point that these companies, the only way they can meet the requirements is to produce an electric car. I'd laugh when people act like Elon Musk, you know, the Tesla. They talk about companies that are overrated because of their stock price. You know, they didn't make, Elon Musk didn't make all of this money, these billions of dollars, selling Teslas. He made that money selling credits, carbon credits. The government made up this carbon credit scheme in the name of the global warming. And you can see where, again, the money gets funneled to a handful of people. The government invents a quote unquote market. Oh, because of climate change, which isn't real, it's a lie. You have these carbon credits issued to each auto manufacturer. And if you make motors that, you know, breathe out what plants breathe in, carbon dioxide, you're using up carbon credits. And the other manufacturers then were forced to buy more. Well, guess what? Tesla gets gifted their carbon credits to sell to the others. That's where they made their money. If you want to do away with the electric car nonsense, you go in and you just take the EPA and all of those mandates about these ridiculous standards, these fuel mileage standards, these carbon dioxide emission standards, and you throw them out the window. If Trump wanted to revitalize, I'm going to give you the clue. If Trump wanted to revitalize the American auto industry, he could do this. They could do this overnight. You wouldn't even need Congress for this, I don't think, because it's all done via regulation. You go in and you say, okay, the safety and emission standards We're rolling them back to, say, year 2000 levels. They have to meet that standard. That's it. If you got two airbags in the front of the car, it meets the standard. If you meet the emission standards of the year 2000, we're good to go. They can start producing vehicles people want, and you might actually get a little competition, and prices might start coming down to where people could afford cars again. They always try to make these problems sound really complicated because they can't have the conversation about what really would have to be done. As I said, you have to start here with climate change as a hoax, and nobody, including Trump, is actually going to say that. He said that off and on years ago, but then he kind of had to walk away from it because, after all, the media will call you ignorant or something. You have to start with climate change is a hoax. If you can't start with climate change is a hoax, then you can't get anywhere. Because you can't say climate change is real and carbon dioxide is killing us all, which is laughable. You can't say that and then turn around and roll back these standards. Because then they just say, well, you're trying to kill us all. You're going to have to address it. And they're not. They're not going to do that. And the final thing on the Daily Mail's list is women's sports and gender-affirming care. I don't give a shit about that. I don't think y'all do either. The Republican Party playing their role as caring about any of the insanity in this world made their big issue women's sports. No one cares. I don't care. In fact, that would probably be one thing that would like make women's sports more interesting. If I said, watch this women's boxing match, you would be like, yawn. But if I said, watch this women's boxing match, it's going to be the top woman fighter against a bottom-ranked transgender, you're probably going to watch it because you're going to watch that woman fighter get her ass whipped, don't you? If anything, transgenders in women's sports actually makes women's sports more interesting. But this was the Republicans' big issue. Look, I get it. The insanity of the Biden people, I'm not saying like things aren't going, some things might not get better. I don't, because I know I sound real negative about this stuff. Look, I'm not saying that you might see some things. I mean, they were already starting to roll this transgender stuff back months ago. This started months ago. It had been to the extreme. They're rolling some of that back. But the idea that these fundamental problems are going to get addressed, I'm extremely pessimistic. And we've gone over the reasons here why. Because there's fundamental issues with the system itself. And Trump is not going to address those. And even if he wanted to, he doesn't have the power and authority to do it. I'll say it again. They make these problems to be as convoluted and complicated as possible when they're not, for the simple fact that they don't want real solutions to them because they don't want to fix them. They're getting a kickback. Everything funnels into this handful of people and they divvy a little out to keep the system going. You got to pay people to keep the system going. You know, you're not in the club. You're one of the sheep. You're part of the livestock that they're siphoning money off of. You know, and it doesn't matter what the issue is. Housing costs. All right, gosh, the government needs to do something about housing costs. Well, that's easy. Make it illegal for outfits like BlackRock or investment firms to buy up properties, rental properties. Just make that illegal. You know, it's not difficult. Make it a law to where, you know, housing can only be owned by individual people, and you cannot own more than, say, five. There you go. Simple as. You go back to a day when you go to rent a house and you go meet the guy that owns the house. Back in the day, it was usually some elderly person that wound up with a second house and they're renting it out for extra income. And you can have normal, sane rent prices again. Lo and behold, think they're going to do that? You think they're going to go up against BlackRock? No. Or not. And yet, see, people sit around whining. They need to do something about the cost of rent. Well, yeah. But they, again, they'll turn it into this convoluted problem. It's just so we're going to have some hearings, and we're going to have to hire a commission and study the problem and try to figure it out because it's so complicated. Except it's not. Anybody with a few minutes can sit around and figure out what the problem is and thus what the solution. And yet these people continually tell us, oh, it's very complicated. We have to study it. We're going to have a commission. We're going to have some hearings. They love that in Congress. We'll have some hearings and discuss about it and do some photo ops. But they're not going to address it. They're not going to try to solve the problem. And it doesn't matter what the issue is. You know, healthcare. I've talked about healthcare. I came up with a nice simple plan that would help on healthcare costs. Talked about it on a recent show. You know, maybe if I can come up with something that could effectively work, surely these people can. But somehow, miraculously, they can't because it's just too complicated. Because they're not. They're not going to fix it. Because they can't fix it. This is, you know, because you would have to essentially blow up the system itself and start over from scratch. Donald Trump ain't going to do that. The Republicans in the Congress and Senate aren't going to do that. You're going to get some window dressing. They're making a show out of this. They're going to deport some people. My guess is you're going to see they're going to deport some people. They'll probably talk a few of the oil companies into dropping the price a few cents. They can point at that. You know, they've already been rolling back the whole transgender thing as if that's going to make this huge difference in our day-to-day lives. Again, I don't mean to be negative, but don't be delusional. You might see some certain aspects of things get a little better. If nothing else, people's attitudes might get a little better, a little more optimistic, and that might put some kind of little bump in things. But at the end of the day, don't expect a lot of change. We're going to wrap up on that note. I had another kind of a more lighthearted article lined up. I didn't round up with time to do that, but nonetheless, it's all good. I appreciate you joining me today. I'll be back with tomorrow's Parish of the Patriots program. I still haven't recorded that yet, by the way. I'll have to do it tomorrow, but I will get that done. Dr. Johnson will be here Wednesday with the Orthodox Nationalists. He will be back here Thursday with his Daily Nationalist. I hope to be here Friday. It's tough. The Friday show I struggle with. Again, a lot of times I don't have a lot to talk about. There's not a lot of subject matter to discuss. And I never want to feel like I'm just phoning in a show. So, you know, it's touch and go. But I do plan to. I have good intentions. We'll see if they play out. And if such, we'll see you on Friday. I hope you have a great work week. Again, catch all our great content. We do have up the rest of, we'll have up for the rest of this week. As always, keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.